This is a recording of a sermon given at the First Unitarian Church of St. Louis.
Happy Mother's Day to all of you. This is a day where we ask, where are our mothers? Some of us are mothers. Some of us have very good relationships with our mothers who are still alive. Others may have ambivalent relationships with mothers or grieving a loss of someone who has died. But sometimes we wonder, where are our mothers? As the song said, sometimes I feel like a motherless child, out in the world alone. And there are children in this city, even very young children, who are often without someone watching over them, someone tending to their needs, someone concerned for their well-being. Those of you who have been around here for a while may have noticed a slight shift in the way that we talk about Unitarian Universalism and our understanding of it, from ideas to action. In the so-called olden days of the 1950s and 60s and 70s, Unitarians and Unitarian Universalists tended to emphasize ideas. We never said we had the one true answer to the troubles of life, but we had many. And more importantly, we believed in the freedom of religious expression, the freedom of ideas and exchange of ideas, open-mindedness towards diversity of belief. We still, to this day, celebrate diversity of opinion, freedom of thought. We encourage and defend the rights of conscience and the ability for each person to speak their mind. We try to find opportunities to engage in dialogue with one another, to teach one another, to listen. Just last night, there was a speech here. Very intelligent woman speaking about possibilities and the ways to work peace in South Asia. You may remember that one definition of Unitarian Universalism is someone who approaches all questions with an open mind and an open mouth. We often are filled with opinions and willing to share them, even contradictory opinions. At a time when we drew from a fairly narrow socioeconomic slice of humanity, Unitarian Universalists emphasized our diversity through our willingness to tolerate and accept many ideas. But now, the emphasis is much more on action. Now the emphasis is much more on what are we going to do. We are more likely to say that we are a covenantal faith than a non-creedal faith. Certainly we still have no creeds, but we hold more dearly the agreements we make about how we will be together. It is not enough to think about inherent worth and dignity. We work to promote the worth and dignity of every person, to find pathways that lift people up, immigrants and refugees, people who have lived here their whole lives under shadows of discrimination or self-doubt, people who are gay or lesbian, bisexual or transgender, who did not feel that they could be themselves in the world, to find a place where they can be lifted up and affirmed, to find people who struggle with racial hatred or ethnic hatreds, feeling that they cannot be themselves, and finding a place where they can be fully themselves, honored for who they are, celebrated for what they are, and then able to share what they have with the world. This is the ideal of this congregation, a place to come and share what is of greatest worth within each of us, our beauty, our flowering that came from the seeds, that came from the flowers before. This is nothing new, of course. We've always emphasized just a shift in focus. We've always said we hold deeds above creeds. In the 1800s, this was a phrase, deeds above creeds. But now, instead of simply searching for truth, we encourage spiritual growth and engage in spiritual practice and see our lives as an expression of our ideas and our values. The point today is that our love is measured not by what we feel, but what we do. And I will say that a mother is not simply a woman with a female with a fertile womb who carried a baby to term, as brilliant and beautiful and amazing as that is. And I know it's amazing, it's very personal right now to think of my own daughter, my little baby, who I can still remember when she's a teeny thing and fit in my hands, carrying a baby, a teeny thing that could fit in her hands. It's an amazing wonder to celebrate this possibility and this power. But more importantly, a mom is not someone who can do that alone, physically and materially. It's someone who is caring, who does the work to help others grow, to be concerned about particular lives and do the hard work that is needed to nurture those lives, to help them face the hard edges of life and ease the pain and suffering, to find their power to weave the world anew. The Dhammapada speaks about the one who follows the way of love, the way of abundant love, of equanimity and compassion. And there have been many mothers in this congregation. There are names that we still hold up. The name of Mrs. Grimm is still held up, and Abby Elliott, going back to the very beginning, the mother of this church. That's why we have out in the foyer both William Elliott and Abby Elliott, equal in size and placement, partners in working. And they were tireless workers, both of them, their entire lives tireless, working to uplift others, to share with others, to encourage others. Theologically, we speak about this power that's in the world. This power, it's like an all-mother, what the Hindus call Mahadevi, the great mother. And I hold up that image over and over again of the great mother in a culture in which male divinity is so easily, automatically, and even thoughtlessly raised. It is essential to call upon the wholeness by holding up God as mother, as great mother, as all mother. I've mentioned before that God can be like a warrior, like Durga riding on a tiger into battle to protect her children against evil. Or she can be like Kali. God can be destructive and as frightening as she is generous. The point for Unitarian Universalists is not to take one particular image of God literally, whether it's Jesus' image of the mother hen calling her chicks under her wings, or is an image of abundance and fertility, the great universe bearing the seeds of life and souls like light. The point is not to take any one image literally, but to notice that divine power, to understand it and see it in the world and celebrate it, note its presence. Honor the presence of the Great Mother whenever it appears, wherever it appears, to be thankful and grateful for that nurturing power that appears in human life, to see it active wherever people reach out and take care of one another, become friends, teach language skills, comfort those who have fallen, and lift them up again. To be thankful for it and then to become part of it. To become part of the Great Mother, to express that mothering spirit in our own actions. This is what it means to be balanced in gender. There's a lot of discussion now about the diversity of gender and those people who are genderqueer, intersex, human beings who don't quite fit the two simple categories that by which we shape most of humanity. Something like love, something like generosity, something like hard work done to nurture other people has no gender whatsoever. It's not simply transgender, but universal. But appears in moments, in small things and big. I have a friend who posted on Facebook this last week. She was shopping in a grocery store, went to pick up a few of her grandson's favorite foods, but she went in realizing that she only had $30 cash. She's one of those people who tries to grow a lot of her own food right in her own garden because she wants her life and her family's lives to be grounded in the simple and the healthy and the pure. And at the store, she always buys things like organic milk, even though it's expensive. When her grandson's staying with her, she buys his favorite bread, the Ezekiel bread with raisins in it. These are pricey foods, she knows, but they're wholesome. When she got to the cashier, she counted slowly as each item was being rung up, slowing the cashier down. And when she reached her cash limit, the last thing left on the line were two boxes of blueberries, which she knew that her grandson loved and would devour in about 3 minutes or maybe one. This grandmother just smiled and apologized for her poor planning and had to set the blueberries aside. As she finished her order, she wished the cashier a happy Mother's Day and walked off to her car. But just as she was getting into her car, another woman, the woman who had been behind her in the line, came running up and flagged her down. This woman, who was probably also a mom and a grandmother, handed her the blueberries through the car window with a big smile and said, "Happy Mother's Day." These two women connecting with one another, taking care and showing their care in simple ways, love being present. The Catholic saint, Catholic servant, worker, Mother Teresa said, love can never remain by itself. It cannot remain by itself. By itself, it has no meaning. Love has to be put into action. And that action is service. This flower communion ceremony is about what sort of work and gifts we bring to the church. That here, by bringing what is most sacred to us, by bringing our most passionate values, what concerns us the most deeply and what brings us the deepest joy, by sharing those with one another, and making them sacred and sharing the connections, we find something greater, that spirit of the Great Mother. Mothers are those who do the work of support and sustenance, and so in effect we are all mothers nurturing minds and lives and values here. We each bring something to the church, and then at the end of this service, we choose flowers. The flowers, there will be many flowers. Flowers are brought in today, and the children are now arranging the flowers. And as they come in, pick one flower and look at it. Think of it as being what you brought. If there's one that you actually brought, that's great. And if it's just another flower that's in the abundant arrangement, choose that as yourself. And then at the end of the service, don't take your flower. You take another flower that someone else brought. You take what others have shared, the sacred and the holy, the good and the beautiful. That is what it means to be a mom, to see the beauty in other people and to share your own strength in nurturing their wonderfulness. But it's sometimes hard to know what to do. It's sometimes difficult to know the right thing. Life is not easy. I remember very clearly, and it always comes back to me every Mother's Day, especially a family, Unitarian Universalist family, a young boy who had been raised in the UU Church was now in his mid to late 20s and became addicted to heroin. And his parents, members of the church, kept asking me, I don't know what to do. They wanted to love their child. They wanted to affirm their child just as he was, and yet they could not love what he was doing. He was stealing from them and threatening others and wasting his life and destroying his own mind. The drugs taking away his own good willpower and everything that he knew, everything that they had taught him. The addiction pulling him down and dragging them with him. And they sometimes said, what do I do? Do I just cut him off? Is that the way that I express love? How do I nurture his life? Do I tell the police that he stole from me this week? Is that how I show love? Or do I protect him? Show him that I'm still willing to stand by him despite all the bad things that he's doing, despite the fact that he pulled a knife on me last week. It was a hard moment. What does it mean to be a loving parent? What does it mean to serve the great mother when evil is twisting someone that you love, hurting their life? I've been with parents beside the beds of children in hospitals, and knowing how limited your power is, and you want so much to take away the pain and not being able to do it. To be a mother is not easy. It is hard sometimes. It is scary. It's part of yourself. Part of what you identify with is at risk. This whole last year, of course, in St. Louis, and really in all of the United States, has been dominated by an awareness that some young people are more at danger, more at risk than others. More at risk of becoming criminals, more at risk of becoming victims of one sort or another. When there were many, many forums, or still forums and discussions going on about race and race relations in the city, trying to find ways to improve it. But I remember what touched me the most were those panels of mothers who would talk about their experiences. Mothers and grandmothers talking about their young sons running to catch a bus and then being stopped by the police and held for hours. Mothers talking about hearing about shootings and worrying who was involved. Back in December, the New York Times had a really good article titled, "At Home and at Work, Black Police Officers Are on the Defensive." We know that all police officers are feeling a little more anxious these days. But those who are both police officers and black identify even more with tension, being pulled, a tug of loyalties. Being pulled between their loyalty to the people who feel unfairly targeted by the police and to fellow police officers, white and black, who routinely face dangerous situations requiring split-second life-or-death decisions. The article mentioned Sergeant Damon Hayes of Kansas City Department. He's from a black family, his black mother. Somehow during one of those classic Thanksgiving conversations where you think Thanksgiving is all about gratitude and abundance, and somehow you get into your family stuff, right? You love your mother, but she says stuff that just irritates you. And in this moment, the mother, they started talking about what was going on. This, of course, is November, just as the whole media circus about tensions in Ferguson were at their rising towards their October peak, November. And in November, they're having this conversation. They began to talk about police shootings of people. And then the mother said, "How is it? How is it that a police officer could ever be scared by some 18-year-old kid?" she asked. And then in anger, in fear and anger, she said, "They're all murderers," forgetting that she was indicting her own son in that moment. According to Sergeant Hayes, 50-year-old man, he tried to calm his mother down. He tried to explain to her, "We don't wake up in the morning hoping to murder someone." But he explained to the reporter, "She was not hearing anything that I said." She was angry at that point. It's frightening. Our parents get angry when they don't hear us. Sometimes this goes on for years. We misunderstand and we miss the cues, and so we must look for larger sources of understanding, larger sources of peace, larger communities where the great spirit of the great mother connects us and calms the mother down until she's able to hear her son again, affirm her pride and love in her son again. They had another little piece about Sergeant Haynes trying to nurture his own fellow police officers. And there was one point where one was talking to him and asked, "Are all of you black people angry about the non-indictment decision?" And he turned and said, "Well, the black part of me isn't angry." Surprised his friend, brought his friend a little closer to him, created more of a sense of trust and hope, comforting one another, mothering one another in a sense, in a holy and grand sense. Today, our Towards Justice group, as part of the engagement and conversations that we've had, we're going to be putting up a banner. The banner says, "Black Lives Matter," and then underneath says, "Join the conversation here." It's that conversation, it's that engagement where we share ideas, where we come to understand one another, but it's not only in ideas, it's in all the ways that we work to bring peace and justice and love into this world, to give people the opportunity to make conscious choices, and then to practice and face the results of practice well, and then face the results of their practice, the results of their choices, with encouragement and understanding and sometimes forgiveness. But the point is that though all lives matter, every single person is of value, the mother chooses her children. Perhaps it's a large circle of friends of her children. Perhaps it's only just a few that she can focus on. But the mother always focuses. It's a very personal image. I've read theologians who said that Jesus' choice of the word for father was papa, making God very personal. And the image of mother is also a very concrete personal image that I matter. So sometimes we have to be specific about particular lives, show the way we apply that in how we live in the world, and then ever expand that love and compassion out to wider and wider circles. And there's so many ways in which love and care and compassion are being nurtured in this world, and justice, thoughtful, hard-edged justice, facing the difficulties of life, is being applied with compassion, tempered by mercy. Heard a program, one last program that I wanted to mention today, a program called Conscious Choice. And I just saw the title. I thought, Unitarian Universalists must have created it, but it was not created by UUs. Conscious Choice, it's an approach to empowering young women and helping reduce teen pregnancies by building a supportive community around girls in schools where many have become pregnant way too early. The participating young women are taught how to make a conscious choice to delay motherhood, to make sure that they graduate from high school, and when they graduate, are specially rewarded for having made a conscious choice and followed through on that choice. The young women are offered regular education and workshops on reproductive health and other issues such as bullying and etiquette. They're granted scholarships at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Special events and gifts and mentoring are offered to them, strengthening them. Sort of like the program that we have for those immigrant and refugee people who are somewhat at risk and need to be given the resources to be able to make good choices and live well in the world. There are many programs, many ways in which the Great Mother's power is being lived out, sometimes in very small and particular ways, and sometimes in grand and glorious ways. Our faith, the faith of this congregation, is that the greatest power comes through wise use of love, tempered by reason. What will you do? How will you live so that that greatest power comes to you? Where are our mothers? Where is your own mother? And are you, in some way, the mother for whom someone else is crying? Crying for and seeking. Let us be the answer to the question, where are our mothers?
You have been listening to a sermon recorded at the First Unitarian Church of St. Louis.